For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Well, good evening, everybody. Lately, for those of you who have been here or perhaps at Rockefeller Chapel, I think that on at least a couple of occasions, Taigen has talked about deep listening as something that it would be behoove of all of us to do if we take seriously the project of sort of trying to overcome some of the rifts we have in our society, some of the problems that we have between people. And I've been thinking, you know, I'm sure because this has come up, I've been a little more aware of listening than perhaps I might otherwise be, and I've noticed just in my my own life, nothing dramatic, but misfires of listening, things that where I've had difficulty communicating with a friend or friends. They couldn't necessarily, they didn't always seem to be hearing me, and I think that I was maybe not always hearing them. So listening has been on my mind, and this idea of deep listening. I'd heard that expression before, but I'd never really thought about it. So I decided to Google it and see what people have to say about deep listening. And I didn't get very far in that project. As a matter of fact, I sort of got as far as one paragraph, which I'll read to you in a minute, and it sort of generated some thoughts. So I thought that was maybe enough for the present purpose. And I think that there are people here probably who as part of your work perhaps, or as part of being, you know, in close relationships or that kind of thing, may have had occasion to both think about listening and practice listening in a way that maybe I'm not so often called upon to do. So I don't purport that anything I have to say about listening is particularly profound, and I look forward to other people who may know a little bit more about the topic than I do coming up, you know, sharing later. But anyway, so I Googled deep listening, and the first thing that came up was from a place called the Center for Contemplative Mind in Society. Has anybody ever heard of that? I had. You have? I'd like to look further into them, but this is their definition of deep listening. Deep listening is a way of hearing in which we are fully present with what is happening in the moment without trying to control or judge it. We let go of our inner clamoring and our usual assumptions and listen with respect for precisely what is being said. For listening to be effective, we require a contemplative mind, open, fresh, alert, attentive, calm, and receptive. What really struck me about reading this is how much of it, with minor tweaks, you know, being fully present with what is happening without trying to control or judge it, letting go of inner clamoring and assumptions, coming to it with an open, fresh, alert, attentive, calm, receptive mind. All these things sound to me very much like a description of what we do in Zazen. Does it strike anybody else that way? It really does. I was really hit by that. And so then I started thinking about Zazen itself as maybe kind of a species of listening. And I'll say a few things about that. And I think it's maybe easy and difficult in some of the same ways as listening more generally can sometimes be. It's not always easy to listen. I don't usually have to look very far in any kind of conversation, and especially any kind of difficult conversations, to sort of witness in myself a kind of inner clamoring, right? All kinds. It could be, if somebody's confronting you with something difficult, it's very easy right away to get into, some sort of self-justification or, a desire to clarify things in such a way that, the criticism or the problem is deflected, or maybe something witty that you could say that would diffuse tension. All these kinds of things be in operation, right? Even before we open our mouths. I'm just speaking for myself. I presume other people sort of maybe occasionally experience similar kinds of things. And even if it's not, anything difficult, being confronted conversationally, even our desire to understand a little bit too quickly can, I think, interfere with our ability to actually take in what they're saying. I've had this experience, and I'm sure I've done it to other people as well, where, I'm trying to explain myself to somebody and say, oh, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand. Stop talking. I got it. And it's like, and it's just this way of, it's a way of not hearing, right? Not listening. And all of this is a kind of talking back, right? That's an operation even before we open our mouths. And it's an effort. There's work that goes into it. And I suspect that if we look, if we scrutinize it very much, that we'll see that it's an effort to, perhaps maintain a notion of ourselves that we, that may not be accurate, but we're invested in for various reasons in trying to keep it, or just, for diffusing tension. It could be any kind of thing. That ideal image that we try and maintain of ourselves, the one whose fault it really isn't, if people really, could take a look, and the one who is, when all said and done, is just fine. Thank you very much. No problems here. All this is what Dogen Zenji, I think probably most of you know of him, but for those who don't, he's sort of the founder of sort of the Japanese phase of our tradition, 13th century. He talks in Genjakon about carrying oneself forward. And I think all those kinds of things I'm talking about are, at least a mode of carrying ourselves forward. The actual quote is something like, if I wrote it down here. To carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self, or themselves, depends on the translation, is awakening. It's this idea of imposing impressing ourselves upon situations, experience, and so on, in a way that fosters and maintains this sort of untrue self, maybe we'd say. So all this is just about what happens sometimes when we listen. And when we're having conversation with people, right, there's always the time and the place and the need to, even though there's been maybe all this chatter all along, there's the time to actually sort of respond, actually to speak, right? And at that point, hopefully, as Buddhists, we're guided by what we call right speech, which is part of, you know, one aspect of the Eightfold Path, and just sort of very generally to be able to, very generally, right speech would be, the most general way of putting it, would be speech that promotes or fosters awakening, liberation, that kind of thing. But more specifically, it talks about things like, you know, speaking truthfully, at an appropriate time, in an appropriate way, all those kinds of things. But to even do those, to speak in that way, I think maybe requires, you know, the prior step of actually listening. And listening, unlike speech, or maybe even unlike things, other parts of the right of the Eightfold Path, you know, there's no, and I have to say, right. We talk about right understanding, right speech, all that kind of thing. That's a little misleading. The idea is translated differently: noble, appropriate. It's not like factually right or wrong or whatever, but it's a bigger idea than that. But with listening, I don't think it's like that. It's not like there can be right listening and not right listening, or noble listening and not noble listening. There can only be, I think, listening and not listening. Not letting, not actually letting what is being said make it all the way through, but, you know, producing this, talking back to it, even before we're actually speaking. Suzuki Roshi, who, for those of you who might not know, is kind of the founder of the American phase of this tradition, 50 or 60 years ago, he talks about letting thoughts, in sitting, in zazen, letting thoughts come and go, you know, rise and fall of their own accord. And he sometimes he uses the phrase, you know, let them come and go, let them come in one door and go out the other door. Don't invite them to stick around for a cup of tea. And I think that sticking around for a cup of tea, just that image itself, it implies this kind of conversation, right? I mean, that's what you do when you have tea. It's this kind of engagement. Says we don't have to do anything about them, and it's not doing anything about them. That's precisely not asking them to stick around. You know, how would we ask them to stick around? By doing some of the things that we're always we're asked not to do in this definition of deep listening. You know, by applying judgment, by applying attempts to control, by answering back with a subsequent thought. You know, by, I mean, we all do it all the time, right? We, you know, there's this sort of cascade of one thought to another thought, and, you know, oftentimes we're stewing about something, whatever it is. But the effort in Zazen is, as much as possible, not to speak back. Just let those things be what they are. Let sensations be what they are, let thoughts be what they are, not tell ourselves stories about what's going on, just to let them come and go as they do and neither chase them away or run after them. You know, and that's maybe more, well, in a sense, it's perfectly easy. In some sense, it's more easily said than done, in that we all engage in this probably for most of the time we're on our mats and cushions. But the fact is, you know, we're given this very direct, simple instruction about how to sort of undercut that process. And what that is sort of moment after moment, even as we're aware that all this stuff is going on, all this talking back to our, what we're experiencing, what we're thinking, you know, simply to take every opportunity that we can in the course of sitting to just return to our breath, return to our posture, and wait for, you know, the inevitable something else coming in to grab our attention and try to drag us away from the simplicity of that situation, and then just do it again. Back to breath, back to posture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Dogen speaks sometimes about taking a backward step. He talks about zazen as taking a backward step. And, you know, I don't know fully what informs that image, but I think that at least part of it is that we don't turn away from this display of mental phenomena that is ongoing. You know, we actually listen to it. I mean, this is, you know, in a dictionary sort of definition of listening, little more bare bones than the one I gave you before, they talk about two things. One is to make an effort to hear something, and maybe that's what we don't want to do. Maybe that effort to try and hear something, to try and make sense, to try and engage in a project of that kind is maybe not helpful in the instance of meditation because it involves us in precisely those kinds of things that we're trying to set aside, judgment, control, getting a grip, all those kinds of things. But the second part of that, of a basic dictionary definition, is to pay attention. Just pay attention, pay heed. Very like the idea of mindfulness in some ways. And so we can let all this go on, but we take a backward step. And we let it simply be what it is, right? So Dogen talks about a backward step. Uchiyama Roshi talks about opening the hand of thought and letting thoughts be released. He doesn't talk about pushing them away. He just talks about opening the hand. A former teacher of mine had this wonderful expression that I've never fully understood. You'd say, just attach dharma habits and the defilements will be self-liberating. I think it's the same, maybe the same kind of idea. So you know, I quoted this thing from Dogen, to carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion, that myriad things come forth and illuminate the self or themselves is awakening. You know, we could twist that or, you know, and this guy's playful with words, so I don't think it's inappropriate to play with his words a little bit. We could twist them a little and we could say something like, to carry the self in zazen, to carry the self forward and speak back to the myriad of things is a kind of delusion, right, or a kind of confusion. Whereas if we allow the myriad things to come forth and just speak for themselves, that's maybe some kind of awakening. So what would it mean for things to speak for themselves? It could be just, you know, letting a moment of confusion be a moment of confusion, letting a moment of anxiety be a moment of anxiety, letting happy thought about somebody just be a happy thought about something, but not trying to manipulate, control, judge, prefer. You know, we can make a long list of those things. And I think we do that. There's a way in which we, you know, Dogen also says, you know, that those who are awake about the nature of delusion. Those who are deluded are deluded about the nature of awakening, something like that. So that, you know, there's this projection of this idea about what it would be to be awake or whatever, that ultimately it can be none other than, you know, this carrying forward self that we're trying to avoid. So, you know, so we can, you know, that frame, we can just listen to, be awake to all this stuff that's going on in our minds. Now, to tie the two parts, these two kinds of listening I've been talking about together a little bit, you know, the kind of deep listening that was talked about, I think these people, Center for the Contemplative Mind Society had, and, you know, and the Taiken has been talking about, that is a kind of listening that we might do with one another, a little different maybe than the listening that I'm talking about we can do in Zazen. And so in that context, I would absolutely not be proposing that we attend to that as kind of, you know, let people sort of say what they want, you know, it's all delusion, you know, nothing like that. I mean, we have to, when we're engaged in conversation with people, we have to as they say in this definition, treat it with the utmost of respect, right? And really try and take in. It's an act of communication, right? And it would be horrible to sort of treat it exactly like we treat the kinds of things that come up, the same as the way we treat the things that come up in Zazen, in our own minds. You know, we might recognize as people confront us with this or that issue or difficulty. I mean, at least the context Taigen's been talking about, deep listening and head, you know, sort of in the context of issues of, you know, persistent racial injustice, that kind of thing. You know, we can receive that and can understand that, you know, when we're a part of these conversations, that what our conversational partners are saying, very likely by virtue of the fact that they're people, will be informed, you know, by what we call the three poisons, greed, hate, and delusion, that this, you know, or karma or whatever, that these, that'll be part of what we're hearing. And it will also be part of what we're expressing, right, when we come to express ourselves. But the idea, I wouldn't propose that we say, okay, well, that's just, you know, that's just reading delusion or whatever speaking. No, this is a different kind of conversation. And so what seems to me to be required is not turning away, but, you know, on that kind of ground, but simply to it kind of calls for compassion about our shared predicament as human beings, right? And the conditions under which we try to express ourselves and try and communicate. But I think it is, you know, this other kind of listening that I talk about in Zazen, which is in some ways is very similar, but this thing of suspending judgment, suspending control, suspending a project, suspending self-justification, simply letting go of that as much as possible in the interests of letting whatever justice of things in our own mind, the things we hear from other people, just present themselves as they are for what they are, could be extremely useful. In other words, my suspicion is that the kind of work we do in Zazen, you know, that kind of listening to the effect, to the extent that we can bring it into our interactions with other people under any circumstances, strikes me as being at least potentially enormously useful, right? And just another comment about Zazen itself. It's like we see all this stuff, and you know, we put it under this grand term of delusive thinking or whatever. But if we can, not carry ourselves forward, simply allow it to be what it is, then it becomes like any of the other 10,000 things, right? Any of the other phenomena in the world that even though we call it delusion, if we can receive it correctly, it in itself presents us with a kind of truth about who we are, how we produce certain kinds of thoughts, and it can even in a certain sense preach Dharma, as can all of the pain and suffering we see out in the world. If we can just kind of get out of our own way and listen deeply. I guess that's more or less what I have to say. And maybe somebody else has something to say. Thank you.
Talk. It reminds me of what when I first came to practice here, what was so jarring to me, because the place that I practiced before here, when there was a Dharma talk, we listened and sat still and did not respond and did not even meet the eye of the person giving the talk. And so I came here, and then all of a sudden it was a conversation. Instead of what seemed like deep listening exercise. So Jerry remembers, because she practiced.
I've been in places like that too.
Then there became a learning of doing both, which are important. I mean, both are important, right? Deep listening and then sincere response. So it's not no response, but it is deep listening. But then a sincere response is okay. It's like not like you can't respond.
No, absolutely not.
As long as you have.
That's what I was trying, that little bit about, right speech.
Right.
It's like,
exactly.
For right speech to be possible, it requires this prior thing of actually listening, and that can require require not like as soon as something's being presented, just like right away, like being too. I mean, I do this when I hear other people speak. Sometimes it's like something interesting happens, and I'm sort of off and running with my response and completely dividing my attention at best from what's actually being said. You've probably seen me embarrass myself by doing precisely that in this very room on more than one occasion.
People do you do that, that, and we all do it, it's like you're not listening. You're only thinking of what you're going to say in response before you've actually listened. So it is helpful to have this discipline of listening first. Thank you.
Sarah, and then Jerry.
Thank you so much for this. It really just brings to mind how both deep listening has been informed by my sitting practice and also vice versa. And also, I spent some time working as a chaplain, and arguably one of the most important parts of that was deep listening. But I found this kind of, a lot of the clamor that would happen would come because I was so worried about saying the right thing after the listening stopped.
Yeah.
And I found that, I mean, sometimes I would be more successful than others at just listening and being there, but it's kind of developing a trust and a confidence in one's ability to respond if one just listens fully and presently. It's kind of a vulnerability to just.
Yeah, and probably difficult in that situation because almost by definition you're dealing with somebody, you know, it's a situation where somebody's in need, right? So there's kind of a pressure, right, to, I mean, and I'm sure a real strong desire to have something that's going to be helpful and useful.
And I liked what you said about, you know, comparing practice and how you listen when you sit and you listen when you're listening to someone. Because it does help because, you know, when I first sit on a given day, it takes me 5 minutes just to get in the room and on the cushion because there's so much clamoring going on. And having that experience over and over again, when you go to listen to someone, you know, you're aware of, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's a lot of clamoring going on. And it gives you that knowledge that you can pause and say, wait, focus here. Mm-hmm. Because without that, you're clamoring away and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
So there is some value when you sit and it, to get that awareness that, okay, focus here because, you know, you're everywhere but Tuesday.
Well, you know, I haven't, you know, maybe people have experimented or know of, you know, I mean, sort of the more professional of the listeners among you know of things you can do. But I've actually, since I was thinking of this yesterday, thought, well, what would it be like actually in conversation, you know, or in charge conversations to, you know, to just, for example, do something a little bit like I do in Zazen, just try and let go of whatever my reactivity is and just, you know, maybe stick with the breath for a minute, you know, or you know, or just a breath, you know, and see if that would help open it up. I don't know. I'm going to experiment. Brian?
I found it very helpful, too, to think about listening and Zazen together. And one of the things that came to mind for me was how I think for quite a while, years ago, I was paying attention to what was going on internally during Zazen. And with the emphasis recently on suchness that we've been talking about here, as the totality of what is now, whatever's going on internally in my thoughts or, you know, pain in my leg, whatever it is just one small part of everything. And it's about developing almost this peripheral vision to be able to be with all of it at once, including my thoughts that are passing and going, but not absorb them. And the parallel that I thought of when you were talking was, in talking about another person, my wife has been a therapist, really listens in a way that I don't, in this, she takes in something about the whole person in a way that I don't. I mean, she's picking up body language, and if she knows something of the history of that person, she's got that in mind. It's almost as if she's attending to the suchness of that person, and not just the words they're saying. So that when I find myself doing that, I'm less reactive, and perhaps make more understanding, because there's the totality of my reactivity, that person's pain or whatever, their history, their body language, all these things are going on. And if I'm just focused on the words, I'm more likely to be reactive, I think.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. You used an expression, I can't remember what it was exactly. Peripheral vision.
Yeah.
I really like that image of peripheral vision, because it, you know, this thing of this idea of being able to take in sort of a more sort of totalistic sense of what's going on. And in a way, you know, again, this sort of gets back to this idea of you know, this, I think there's a parallelism with what happens in Zazen. You know, one of the, I've heard people use images like, you know, we have, in, you know, all the stuff happening, we have this projection, and in our usual habit is, you know, we get narrowly focused on that. And I've heard people say, but when you're doing Zazen, you're actually like not, you know, you're sort of shifting away from that and actually paying attention to the screen on which all this is happening. And it's just, I think it's a similar idea, you know, this sort of bigger sense. But and I also think it sort of, I think, reinforces this, you know, what I was trying to suggest about, you know, the way we, well, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, we get distracted by too narrow focus. And that actually doesn't assist hearing another person. It actually can interfere.
One thing that I really love about listening, or deep listening, and then I think why it's so similar when it's really done to Zazen, is like when both in Zazen and when you're listening to someone, if you're really listening, you're putting yourself, or your small self, I think as Suzuki Roshi calls it, like in a box or away, you know, and it, like you, there's you're not sensing, but you're open, right? You're and there's kind of a collaboration that's happening between you, like listening and what you're listening to, and the person that's saying it, or the things around you that are making the sounds or the language, and there's this space that's created that's not yourself. It's the zone of things coming in and you listening at the same time. It's a way for compassion to kind of be cultivated, but also for you to put ideas of because you can't answer that, right? Because every time you try to cut in and be like, oh, well, yeah, I hear that, and like you try to jump in with something, before you've thoroughly listened, you're kind of trying to put your self stamp on whatever's been said or whatever the situation is. You're trying to like, oh, I get that. I'm gonna, you know, as you're saying,
right, yeah, and it's always motivated, right? There's something behind that.
Yeah,
it has to do with like, look at me, you know.
Right, like in that moment, you're trying to say, like, oh, I get it. Like, I understand the situation, you know. And the more that we can kind of put that person, that self, and put that person to sleep a little bit, and activate the person that's open, like the kind of like Zazen, you're realizing that yourself is a bigger self. You know, that what the person is telling you, or what you're listening to, is part of you. You know, and it's just you're slowly becoming bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. You use the term openness. You know, sometimes we talk here about the Bodhisattva paramitas, or virtues, and what are they? Generosity, ethical conduct, toleration or forbearance, energy,
patience.
Well, patience, toleration, forbearance, patience is a good one. For the same one, kshanti, and then meditation, wisdom. But this one, this patience, kshanti, You know, it's oftentimes, it's usually glossed as patience, toleration, forbearance. But one of the other, I encountered this in a text recently, you know, sometimes it's glossed as just receptivity, you know, openness, you know, it's, so we could even think of listening and cultivating listening as maybe part of that.